Saba, thank you so much for joining us on the Ivy Podcast. I've been really looking forward to having you on an episode, and thank you for making my dreams come true.
You are way too kind. Absolutely. The pleasure is mine. Thanks for having me today.
Awesome, Saba. So before we dive deeper into the world of startups, I want to help for members of the audience that might not be familiar with your work. Tell us a little bit more about what you're currently doing now and what your background is. I guess some like your quick pitch.
It's quite simple. I have the best job in the world. I get to work with founders, learn about what they're working on, learn about the technologies before they are out. And then I also get to learn from our world-class investors. And so I do that all day long. I've been doing this for the last 3 years now at Techstars. So technically, my role is a global startup pipeline manager at Techstars, based out of Denver, Colorado. I fell into this role by chance and also, I guess, a bit of good work. I was previously on the founding team of a dating app that went on to be acquired by HubSpot. And that company, Evolve, had actually gone through a Techstars accelerator. So after that, I'm like, oh, how do I help give back and help other founders succeed? And I started mentoring companies in Boston, then I started mentoring in Techstars, New York City, and then Techstars Austin invited me back and said, hey, why don't you help us find companies not like you? And then at the end of that, I had the opportunity where they said, okay, you can either go help Techstars Boston and help 10 companies succeed per year, or you can come join us in headquarters and help 320 companies per year. And so I did the second. And now it's up to 450 companies a year that we invest in through our 3 month accelerator program. Prior to that, I came to the US in 2014 to study at Stanford. And prior to that, I had a marketing agency in Australia and worked for Australia's biggest telecom company called Telstra.
Wow, what an incredible journey it's been. It's a wild ride. And one of the things that I admire about you the most is your generosity and just your giving back nature, right? Because whether it's through your website, through Techstars, Twitter, I always see you giving back to the community. Where does that giving nature come from? Like where does it come from? Because I'm curious, because that's a superpower in today's day and age.
The beauty of it is it's a superpower that anyone can have. You can start to do it tomorrow. I think that a lot of it came from the way that I was brought up. I think like my dad is the most generous person you could ever imagine. My mom is so kind and giving. And we're always about helping other people. We didn't have a lot growing up, and we did struggle early on. I mean, when my parents came to the US, it was a big case of, okay, you have degrees, cool. They don't mean anything here in Australia, because we're originally from Pakistan. So we were just like getting opportunities, people helping us. And so we just kept doing this thing of like, okay, every time we got help, we would help someone else. Only when I joined Techstars a couple decades later did I realize and put a label on it that it's this idea of give first, right? It's not even give first, it's just give. Give without expecting anything in return. Give because you want to help others. Give just because you want others to succeed because someone helped you along the way. And so, everything in life is about what you can achieve with others. Even the fact that we're doing this now, this isn't a podcast with guests if you're not here or if I'm not here. And so it always takes many people to achieve great great things in life. And so it stemmed from my upbringing, but then also being surrounded by great organizations like Techstars and things that I did in university that helped me continue to just always volunteer.
I love that, right? And it makes sense, right? Like, just your upbringing, I believe that it highly influences how you see the world, right? And the fact that your parents were such kind and giving individuals, yeah, it makes sense, right? And just from I guess in a personal and business perspective, right? Whatever you put out into the world, you get it back in return, right? That's kind of how.
Totally, like karma. Yeah, mm-hmm. Whatever you get put out, comes back tenfold. But you don't want to do it for that. Like you don't want to go, I'm going to help Jennifer because I know she's going to help me back. Or mm-hmm. I'm going to give Allison a gift because I know that she gives good gifts. Like it has to be like, I want to give it just for the sake of giving it because that makes me feel great. And it does, whether you want it or not, it does come back tenfold. So the trick is to not expect it.
Yeah. And since we're talking about community and about giving and upbringing, I know one of the things that you have put out there is recently, which really struck me, was no startup has immunity from community. Mm-hmm. Without it, you're just lines of code. What do you mean by that? Or you know, how has that manifested in your experience?
I'm so humbled that you checked out my Twitter. Yeah, no startup has immunity from community. What that really means is that there are lots of products out there. Check out Product Hunt. Mm-hmm. Go look at Hacker News. Even look at the companies that are accepted into accelerators. Like a lot of them are solving a similar problem, but the ones that succeed over and over again are the ones that have the community where it's not just, hey, come and use that platform to make more sales. It's the one that says, hey, we're going to teach you all how to do more sales. We're going to connect you with other people. And so, you know, 2021 is, in my opinion, the year of community. If 2020 wasn't, right, given all of COVID, we all came together online. There are amazing platforms out there, Uphouse, Lunch Club, 1 Million Cups. There's new ones popping up, and there's ones that have been around for years. And so the importance of community in a startup is to differentiate and to bring people together because they don't just want lines of code. Think about the last time that you bought a coffee, right? Like it's a really silly but a simple example where you normally go get a coffee from the place that you have the best experience. Mm-hmm. Right? You can get it from whatever. Let's just say Dunkin' Donuts. Great. $2, awesome. But a lot of people still go out and pay $4 to $5 for one because they like going to the barista at this independent cafe. They like hearing the Aussie accent, or they like the way the place is designed. They like the people that are normally sitting there as well. So it's all about the experience that you have. It's about the people that are there. And to me, that's community. And so people have community, founders have community, and they don't realize they have it. And they're the ones doing the best because it's organic to what they've created.
Absolutely. And you know, over the past 10 years, I've been involved in community-driven startups, and I see the difference, right? I see the difference between those that are focused on community versus those that are not. Exactly what you said, right? It becomes all about the members of the community, about their experience and how it's like a trickle effect, right? Like the word of mouth, as it's known, it becomes part of their identity almost, right? And if you can achieve that, then
totally.
That's a big advantage, right? So speaking, you know, since community, it's trending, right, in 2021, what would you say are one of the misconceptions out there around building community for your startup?
Yeah, people think that community has to happen, let's just say like offline. Like you don't have to, hold on, let me say that again. People think that it has to happen online. They think I'm going to create a Slack. I'm going to invite all my customers here and they're all going to talk. No, community can mean hosting an event once a month where you're delivering a topic, bringing in guest speakers. Maybe you have a podcast and you bring them on as guests. Like community can happen in many different ways, but really all it's really talking about is a connection between individuals. So, you know, social media, the people that do it well reply to everyone. They are building community. The people that do it wrong is where they post things and don't reply. Then what's the point? That's like sending out an email and never following up on it. And so community can happen in person as well, where, you know, maybe you're like, okay, I'm traveling to Hawaii next year. I'm going to start creating a following of people there and you're going to meet up with them in person, right? It's just literally in any way you want, the feeling of creating a connection between two people over and over and over again. And that's what scales. And so it doesn't have to only just be a Slack community. And but the beauty of it is sometimes it just can be. I recently created a Slack community with really promising founders, and there's about 550 founders in there, and the amount they're just helping each other is awesome. And so sometimes it is that simple if they need it. You know, talk to a lot of people, they're not going to say, hey, I need another Slack community to join. I'm already part of 10 to 15, but sometimes it's as simple as that, where you just want to create a place for people to connect, and it's a facility. So there's many ways to do it. And I keep hearing about new ways people are doing it on apps and offline.
I love that. And something key that you mentioned there, right? It's the need. What are the needs of the community, right? And I think if you can start with that, then that's on the right track, right? Because everything falls, rises and falls, you know, on the needs of the community, right? Awesome. So I want to take it back to Techstars, right? Because I have to agree with you. You do have one of the best jobs in the world. I'm a bit jealous.
Come join us. We're always hiring. My team's growing. I am blessed to work with such amazing people. And so you definitely fit in with us.
Thank you so much, Seba. But what would you say are... So there's two things I want to unpack here. One is, what are some of the biggest challenges that you face when sourcing startups, right? Because I can imagine that, you know, being able to have an eye for those startups that are a fit for Techstars versus those that are not. What's the process behind that, and, you know, or some of the biggest challenges that you face when executing on that?
Yeah, I mean, high level, right? Techstars is an accelerator that is for companies at all stages. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we accept companies that are ideas on the back of a napkin, as long as there's a strong team behind them or there's validation. And so we accept companies all the time that are really early, but we've also accepted companies that have gone on to raise about $12 million. The key thing is that we are for startups that want to do more faster, that are trying to solve a problem that they can't figure out right now, but no one ever does it for the money. You're not doing it for the $120,000 that you can get. Mm-hmm. You do it for the mentorship, the network, the fundraising opportunities, but it's never for that upfront money. And so that's why, you know, we're looking for great teams that have a lot of passion, even paranoia to solve a problem. They have gut validation. It's a right time in the market. And so there's a lot of companies out there, right? I look at tens of thousands of companies. One of my associates last week asked me to count it, and I counted, I had 176 pitches.
Wow.
In my inbox from 1 7-day period. Wow. Now that was a high week just because I had run a big event, but I'm seeing hundreds of pitches. And so really the thing is, you know, all the founders are saying, oh, where are all the investors at? All the investors saying, oh man, where are all the founders at? And then you talk to someone who disagrees with Boyce Framos and he's like, man, there's a lot of venture capital money out there and it's getting wasted. And so no one here gets along and agrees on the same thing. But really the essence is you can't talk to every founder. There's no way that I could talk to every founder that I wanted. Mm-hmm. We still only help about 500 companies per year. I wish we could help more. And so, you know, going back to the original question, like, you know, what's the hardest part? The hardest part is feeling like, man, I wish I could help more people, right? Sending out non-select emails to the thousands of companies that didn't get in that I think are awesome, purely because we don't have the spots for it. That's difficult. And so I wish there was a way to help more founders. But yeah, from a VC perspective, it's difficult, right? They're often getting referrals and hosting events and being lead magnets in so many different ways. And they're constantly like, man, I need to meet more founders. And so the cycle continues.
You mentioned something that's interesting to me in teams, right? That you look at the team members of the specific startup. What are some of the traits that help you select, right? Like, okay, this team has you know, what it takes, this team does not. What are some of the key traits that you look for in a startup team?
Yeah, it's important to just indicate, right? Like Techstars looks for six things: team, market, progress, idea. It is so heavily indexed towards the team, right? Mm-hmm. Have they been able to create a good following? Are they a well-rounded team? Mm-hmm. Have they convinced one other person to join them on the journey? Are they really passionate about it? Are they going to work on this for the next 10 years, right? So we're really looking to focus on the team. That also talks about, do I have fun talking with this founder? Can I imagine driving in a car from San Francisco to LA with them, right? So it's really focused, not even about the business yet, but who they are, right? Which is why we invest in people and not businesses. And so some of the traits that we look for, generally speaking, we want to know that they know what they're doing now, today, but also what the big grand vision is of where this could end up. I really look out for founders that are curious. And, you know, you can sometimes think of them in terms of like educated, but it doesn't mean like they went to school, right? Yeah. That doesn't hurt, but are they really informed about all the startups that are in the space? Do they know about what the big companies are doing out there? Are they testing? Are they doing marketing experiments? Are they failing, right? If you're not curious, then I can see it through the communication that I have. Mm. And then that leads me towards almost the 80%. You need to be a good communicator. Make your ask simple, you know, email and follow up and follow through. It is so fascinating to me where I'll meet some founders and I'll be really impressed, but then it'll be like, wait, I didn't hear from you again. And you didn't reply to my email. It's like, wait, you want, you know, money or you want connections and you want me to help, but like you dropped off. And so 80% of life is showing up, and that really shows in startup world, where you just have to ask the right question to the right person and just be persistent with it. And then the last thing that I'll just mention, right, like you just have to be what I call confident, but coachable. So someone who knows what they're doing and knows where they want to get, but they know that there's a whole bunch of stuff that they don't know, right? No one wants to work with someone who thinks they know everything, because there's no way they know everything. And so people that are vulnerable and humble are ones that I really, really enjoy working with. And that's what we bucket into coachability in terms of getting into an accelerator, but also just founders that are like mentoring and advising.
Absolutely. And there's a couple of things that I mentioned here that I want to unpack. The first one is, you mentioned being a great communicator. And I know that you are a mentor and a teacher in the art of pitching. Right? That's one of your things. And I frequently go to your Twitter feed, or I downloaded the resources from your personal website, because I consider that a great skill to have, right? So with that in mind, or in your own words, like, what does making a great pitch mean to you? You know, what are the different, I guess, things that we need to consider when making a pitch, whether it's a personal one or, you know, for a business?
It's so funny you ask, and I want to say that I was recently invited to speak on the biggest stage in the world, we talk about pitch decks, and I'm so proud of it. And I'm happy to share that with you. And I treat me and my brand like a product, which is, my goal was to get on the big stage eventually for pitch decks, because that's all I'm going to talk about, because I see more than them. There's no one, or maybe there's hundreds of people, but I feel like I'm one of the most experienced in it, because I see more than anyone. Like my deal flow is incredible.
Yeah.
And so my biggest tips for people pitching is to just remember three things. There's a million things that you have to keep in mind, but there's three things. One is, it has to be entertaining, because if it's not, I'm going to forget about it. And it's just going to be like, cool, just another pitch. Mm-hmm. And so people normally do that by starting with a really good jaw dropper, or make me laugh, or just, you know, weave in a story that makes me go, wow, I haven't heard that before. The step two of my three tips is inform, like, teach me something new. teach me something I didn't know. If you don't leave me smarter, then I'm kind of like, well, how are you going to change the world in this way if you can't sort of give me something that I haven't already learned? And then the third thing, and this is the most important, because fundamentally, this is the only reason you do a pitch. And it's progress. All you need to do is get the next meeting. People try and bore the ocean. They try and pitch for 5 minutes. People do elevator pitches that go for 2 minutes. But when was the last time you were in an elevator for 2 minutes? It goes for 15 seconds. From level one to level 10, even level 20, your goal is to progress to the next stage, right? So entertain, inform, and then progress. And so progress is all you got to do is go, hey, can I send you an email? Or, hey, can I please have a meeting with you? Hey, can I send you my pitch deck? Figure out what that next step is. And so forgetting that ask is gonna be horrible. So again, entertain, inform, and progress to the next stage.
Entertain, inform, and progress. Awesome. Yeah, I'm definitely guilty of making the mistake. And you know, I've learned this is the hard way of making just one ask. Don't make multiple asks, right? Because then people get confused.
Oh man, when people ask for three or four asks and they're not specific. Like, hey, I need some money. I need some mentorship. I'd love for you to try my product. Can you please add me to your update? And like, no, wait, what? Which one do I do now? Like, all good, just send me an email, right? Like, you want to keep it very clear. Hey everyone, yeah. I'm looking for $500,000. I would love to see if you're interested. Mm-hmm. Are you in?
Yeah.
And people don't even close. Actually, sometimes in investor meetings, they forget to close. They'll ask a question, but they won't see if it was answered. It takes practice. All of this is hard, and I can laugh at it now because from experience, I've made all of these mistakes, and I look at it now, and I'm like, man, it is actually really easy to not do the simplest thing.
Yeah. Now, with the point that you mentioned of, you know, teaching someone something new, like how do you go about that? Especially, let's say, if you're pitching to, you know, an investor that is very knowledgeable in that space, right? Like, I would feel intimidated and I will start to even second guess myself, like, you know, what do you have to teach this person that, you know, they might not already know, right? So how do you find that out?
So, you know, number one, you're going to A-B test a bunch of stuff, right? You're going to do this pitch another 100 times. You're going to see which one got people's attention. So, for example, when I was promoting Aurai, which is a public speaking app, we used to say, did you know more people are scared of public speaking than getting eaten by a shark? Hey, today we're going to teach you about public speaking and why you should download the app Aurai, right? So that worked. And so yesterday I heard a really good pitch on Clubhouse where the lady said, do you know how many children are killed on the road? It was a jaw dropper and it taught me something new. I'm like, oh my God, that's sad. I'm like, man, I need to invest in this product. So it's A-B testing and figuring out what most people don't know, but it can also just be something about your business. Like, you know, Cesar, like, you guys have an awesome podcast and you could inform me by saying we had 5 million people listen to our podcast last month. You've informed me something. That's something I didn't know. That's a lot. I'll be like, cool. How does that compare to ABC podcast? And so it's just this idea of going and making me learn something that I didn't know. It doesn't have to be something brand new that has to relate to me. And you're like, oh, did you learn this? No. Do you know this? No. Right? It's more organic than that, which is just show me that you're intelligent and you're informed.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense, right? Coming across as informed, you know, it's super important, right? Especially when making a pitch. Awesome. Let's shift gears here, and I know mentorship is big for you, right? And you're a big mentor to founders, right? And I know that you have mentioned in the past that you should have three mentor relationships, right? Like someone you mentor, someone who is a few years ahead of you, and someone who's like, you know, super ahead of you, like 20 years, right? How did that develop? Like, what do you currently have those three type of mentorships? And yeah. How does one, I guess, how do you go about finding a mentor?
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, look, I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't have the mentors that supported me, that were cheerleaders for me, that guided me and just helped me grow. Honestly, like, mentors are there to help you succeed and help you through challenges. And all the way from my first ever mentor, that was my brother. Like, I used to just see him doing amazing things and supporting the family. I'm like, he's a great mentor to me because I'm like, I want to do that. And then my first ever formal mentor, Mario Pavlo, that I worked with at Telstra, I'm like, man, like, he wants to see me succeed, but he's not my manager, but he keeps wanting to have phone calls with me and give me advice and help me develop in my career. And I was like, this is so interesting. There's no way that I'd ever be like, let me get on a call with him. But he helped me understand the idea of mentoring. Had I done this back in the day when I was in college or high school, you know, we kind of don't want that. We want to go off the other path and not be like, hey, I want to learn from these teachers. But if we ingrain this early on into young people and students, that getting mentors of people that want to just see you succeed, it's incredible. And so most of mine just fell into my lap. And what I realized is the 2 years behind one is so interesting because they're getting a lot out of it, but you also get a lot out of it because you're just teaching. It's a space repetition concept where the more you say something, the more you teach something, the more you believe it and the more you do it. Right. So I've got a mentee right now, Robbie, that I have so much fun just mentoring and I give him advice and tell him about how to do things. And I'm like, wait, I should also be applying this. And so it's been an incredible journey. And so I highly encourage everyone to have those three types of mentor relationships because one, when you mentor other people, you feel good and you're reminded about your own learnings, which means you're basically mentoring yourself. Someone who's a couple years ahead. For me, it's a gentleman by the name of Safir who I met in Boston. We've been in touch. We talk every 2 weeks. We have it on the calendar. He would never consider himself a mentor of mine, but you know, when he listens to this, he'll be like, oh, wow, interesting. But we're just friends. But I'm always like, cool, what did you do? Right? Because I'm always just trying to catch up to him. You're 2 years ahead. Let me catch up to you and be your peer. And so I learn a lot about technology and I learn about how he navigated the US workforce. And then someone who's 20 years ahead, there's a few of them. There's someone at my work that I just knocked on the door of. I'm like, hey, Dave, I would love to stay in touch with you moving forward. And I just want to pick your brain about the stuff that I'm working on. He's like, okay, cool. And we set it up. Another one is my girlfriend's dad. He's an incredible investor. And I'm like, I want to learn how you made such successful businesses. And so again, he wouldn't say he's my mentor, but I'm like, can I just call you now and then? Mm-hmm. And the third one is really interesting. And this is one that I encourage everyone to do tomorrow. Like, I have mentors in people online. Like, I love listening to Naval Ravikant speak. I love reading the tweets of Elizabeth Yin. And so for me, it's sort of like these people are my mentor. They don't know that I even exist, but I'm learning from them based on the content that they put online. And so learning from other people and seeing how they did it and how they think is an incredible opportunity for everyone to also get mentorship.
Yeah, especially in this day and age, right? Like, you can go online and you can pick your mentor, right? Whoever you resonate with, and just follow that person. And something else that you mentioned that I think is key is make it easy on the mentor, right? Like, the fact that you said, hey, is it okay if I follow up with you? Because I'm interested in this space or on this topic and I see you as a mentor, right? And all the mentor has to do is say yes or no, right? Because a lot of times, you know, even myself, I've made this mistake of crafting like three paragraphs and sending it to that mentor via email. And it's like, wait a minute, this is too much of an email or too much information to be asking, right, for a mentor, right? But I think just that little tactical piece of advice of following up, hey, here's an update from me for this month. Here's what I did. Here's what I failed at, right? And if I'm a mentor, if I see that, I'm like, oh, this guy, you know, this guy, it's worth following up because he's proactive, right? So I think that's awesome that you mentioned that.
It has to just be completely frictionless.
Right.
Some people get stuck with, okay, I need to figure out how to reach out to Saba. I'm going to send him an email. I need to make it convincing. I need to show off a little bit this and that. I'm like, just ask the question. Mm-hmm. Don't justify it. Don't waste time on it. If you want advice, just ask the advice. Mm-hmm. If I can help you, then I've helped you. Then ask me again in a month. And then ask me again in 2 months. 3 months later, it's done. Sahil tweeted this out maybe a couple weeks ago. He goes, instead of asking to meet, ask the question you'd ask if you met.
Right.
So just get straight to it. Like, people don't want to be like formalizing and setting it up. It just creates like too much brain power. Just go ahead and do it. Right. Like, Elizabeth, hey, what do you think about starting a fund? Mm-hmm. And ask the question specific, as opposed to, hey, can I please meet with you in 3 weeks from now? Like, get rid of that. Right now, people are dropping in to different platforms. People like sliding into DMs. People just like having conversations off the cuff. I think, Seth, I didn't mean you meet online. Like, it's part of it. Like, you just network in any ways possible, and eventually they become mentors. Difference is with more successful and rich people, they call it therapy. But at the end of the day, for me, it's still mentorship.
I agree with you, right? And just ask, right? And make it concise. I mean, that's how you and I connected. I almost don't reach out because I was like, man, Sava is so successful. He's doing all these things. And who am I to reach out? No, for real. And that happens in a lot of people's heads, right? Like, they disqualify themselves even before trying, right? So
yeah.
I was like, you know what? I'm just going to reach out to Sava. Whatever happens, it's going to happen. But I'm actually glad that we connected.
You're making me blush. You're lying. You're making me blush. But I get this a lot where I want to learn from other people. I want to ask for a favor, and I'm like, man, I've got imposter syndrome. They're going to think I'm shocking and I'm bad. And like, they just reply. I'm like, wait, you're just another human. So we definitely want to lionize people less in that way. I think is really important because we are all human. We all want to help each other succeed in most cases. And so there's no way I'd ever ignore your message. And I'm so absolutely psyched that you asked me to be on your podcast. So
yeah, no, absolutely. And since we're speaking about imposter syndrome, failures, I'm a big believer that failure can teach you more than success. And I wanted to ask you if you have a favorite failure of yours that helped you learn a very important lesson, right, throughout your career.
You know, I will first say that I don't think things are that binary. Like, one isn't better than the other. And I encourage everyone to try and succeed. But if they fail, it's okay. I think the goal is to just be content that you gave a shot. The worst thing you can do is not actually give it a shot. Mm. That's, in my opinion, more embarrassing or more of a failure. But failing to fail, you know, that's not okay. Like, give it a shot and give it a try. Which failure of my own that I think I had the biggest lesson from? I mean, you know, just talking about it generically, co-founders can be very, very difficult to work with in early stage companies. It is really important to know who you're getting into business with. You want to have a really good grasp of their style. I love working with friends. Most of my companies that I've ever done have been with friends, and I encourage that. I know most people say don't do that. But the biggest failure and the biggest lessons is not asking enough questions. It is better to have a tough conversation on day one or week one than to have a even harder conversation in a month or a year from now. And so I encourage all founders to have the difficult conversation, because there's normally a way off where if you're doing it now to avoid tension, then long-term you're going to have pain. You might as well take on the pain in the short term, and long-term you're going to be happy because you know where things stand. And so, you know, I had that with one of my co-founders in a previous company, and I'm like, man, we kept pushing off to later. And it's like, it ended horribly. And that was a lesson. And now I know how to not have a very bad co-founder relationship.
I love that because that happens to me, right? I want everybody to like me, you know. And for me, having those difficult conversations doesn't come naturally. But I agree with you. Like in my experience, the more I have delayed those conversations, the more suffering I bring onto myself, because you're just prolonging the inevitable, right? Like. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm all about that. It's almost like dating almost, right? Like have those conversations before you get deeper into the relationship. great. So shifting gears here a little bit, and I know we're coming on time, but I wanted to ask you about something else I saw on your feed. I stuck to you a little bit before the podcast.
I can see.
I know that you are a big believer in enjoying the journey and celebrating the small wins, right?
Yeah.
Especially for founders, right? Like, because that can be a very challenging journey. What are some of the ways that we can encourage that more? You know, not just for founders, but even if you're an employee at a startup, right? Like, how can you make more time to celebrate those small wins?
Yeah, I love that. I'm so glad that we're talking about just philosophy, just life and happiness in general. You know, my team at Techstars, I run it like a startup. Mm-hmm. And so we have a weekly stand-up. I have one-on-ones. But mm-hmm. then we have happy hour on Thursdays at 10 a.m. and we just play games. We sit there and for 30 minutes just switch off from all the work that we do, and we play a version of Pictionary online, and we do it just to be able to switch off, right? Then once every 2 to 3 months, every time applications close, we do another happy hour, and we'll just watch YouTube videos together and laugh and embarrass each other and just completely switch off from the day-to-day work. And to us, it just helps us realize that at the end of the day, what matters is the fact that we're enjoying each other's company and getting to know each other. You know, on a separate note, a couple of months ago, I started a detox phone. I found that I was using my phone way too much. I was in bed and trying to consume more data, content and create more content. And I need to go to that clubhouse and I need to write this tweet. And I'm like, no. So I only walk into my room with my black and white old iPhone. I can only listen to Headspace or Spotify or an Audible, and it allows me to have a lot better sleep. And so these little things, I think, all help with happiness, because now I know that I can't message someone on my team being like, hey, don't forget to do this. It usually can, and it totally is fine for it to wait till the morning. And so you need to be the change that you want to see in the world. I need to do the things that I want, you know, my management to do to me, which is have a time to stop work, go and do other stuff. And so I'm buying a bike that I'm super excited about. I recently got a basketball. We're going to go play basketball with my team. And so all these simple fundamental things people just forget, I think, are so important. And so I'm really proud of that, that I've got a team that really cares about health and wellness and mental, you know, happiness as well. So
it's important, right? And I love that you dedicate time to build up your team on a personal level, right? And create stronger connections, because that's important, right? And a lot of times we lose sight of that, especially in startups where it's high hyper growth, right? You have to move fast, but that's important to me, right? Because if you can create that, then the team can navigate through the worst waters, right?
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it is like you have to be relentless with your goals, fearless when asking for help, selfless when helping others, but flawless with how you spend your time. And if you aren't figuring out the good things that make you happy and be flawless about them, you're not going to be happy.
I need to print that out and turn it into a poster and put it in my office. Because that is great advice. I love that.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, these are all different tweets. You know, that's the beauty of Twitter for me. I treat Twitter like a notepad of my favorite quotes that I said to myself that I'm like, I'm going to share with others. And every time I probably got it wrong from what I tweeted at it maybe early this year or last year, but the idea is that I use Twitter as a notepad as a reminder to mentor myself. So I think back to it and go, oh, what did I say back then? Because the more you say it, the more it's repeated, spaced repetition, the better it is for you to remember the lesson that you learned. Like my favorite piece of advice, hey, 180 tone here. My favorite piece of advice is tell people, reread the best books. Mm. Like I've been saying this for years and I'm only seeing more people say it now, maybe over the last few months. But I'm like, you need to reread the best books because at a different point in your life, you're going to realize that you'll get different learnings out of it. And
that so true.
Don't try and count the number of books you read. Try and figure out how to best apply the best books that you get the most value out of already. And so Twitter's another way of doing that, which is I write it and then I reread it. And books, I read them and then I reread them.
I love that you mentioned that because I thought I was alone seeing how a lot of people online brag about, I read 52 books this year. And I always wonder that, yeah, that's great, but did you apply any of the lessons or, you know, did you really absorb?
You're a savage.
No, I always wonder, right? And it's funny because I recently saw, I think it was a tweet from Naval on the 100 best books, right? And if you read those books, then, you know, you're going to have a lot of knowledge about the world and how things work.
I tried to read some of those books on his list. I couldn't do it, but keep going.
They're heavy. No, they're definitely need some time there. But yeah, I agree with you on books. I guess speaking of books, like what are some of the books that have greatly influenced you? And you know, what is the book that you most give to people?
I love this question. So I just finished reading a book by Robin Sharma, The 5 a.m. Club.
Mm.
The biggest takeaway from that is you need 3 or 4 hours to yourself before everyone else is awake for you to get some really good stuff done. I will admit, I don't wake up at 5 a.m., but I do this 3 to 4 hour thing at different times of the day where I'm like, I switch off the world. Mm. The book that impacted me the most in life, I actually think is The Secret by Rhonda Byrne, and we'll share this in the comments later. Just the law of attraction, you get what you want, you get what you put into life, and just attracting the things that make you happy. And so I read that book, and since then, I've probably bought it and given it out to maybe at least 40 to 50 people. And it is life-changing if you are willing to get through the woo-woo-ness, which I'm told by a friend of mine, Liz, which means some people just think it's magic and it's bullshit, but I'm like, no, it actually, I believe it. And it made a huge difference in me. Mm-hmm. And then from a business perspective, Growth Hacking by Sean Ellis, best book, hands down. It helps you to think about how to launch and build your company. And then my favorite book of all time is Steve Jobs' biography by Walter Isaacson. That I've got one in Australia. I've got one in the US. I look at it every day and I just go, you know, he made a huge impact on me in terms of what he did and created. And I just love just rereading the story and getting his perspective. So
I love all those books I mentioned. I'm a big fan of The Secret. I'm a big fan of Robin Sharma. And the first book I read from him was The Monk That Sold His Ferrari.
I love that. I remember that one too. He has given me 2 for 2. Yeah,
that's an awesome book. And of course, The 5 a.m. Club. I try to wake up at 5 a.m., but with a toddler at home, sometimes she beats me to it. But yeah, I do try, because I do think that you should take care of yourself first before taking care of others, right? And that's the whole principle there.
Yeah.
And Hacking Growth. After I visited your website, I was like, you know, this book looks important. And if Savo recommends it, I'm going to check it out. And I love it so far because it applies to startups, but also you can apply it to life in general, right? Or any other project that you might want to start, right? It's a highly recommend that book to anyone looking into startups or starting something, right? Awesome. So just to wrap it up here and bring it home, what would be your number one takeaway that you would like the audience to take from our episode, right? When as it relates to startups, you know, whether as a founder or if you're part of a startup as a teammate, what would be your number one takeaway that you would like to leave us with?
You know, I think this might apply also to just people and life in general. You can't make everyone happy. Mm-hmm. So you just stop trying. You have to just focus on your internal happiness. You need to focus on the company that you're trying to build. And some people say they don't like it. Some people say you're doing it wrong. And really, you want to ask everyone for advice and feel free to ignore all of it. And so really just do what you think is the best thing for you after having a look at how everyone else has done it. And that's the journey. That's your pathway. Only you can be the best version of you. At the end of the day, right, like building a startup is hard. It takes a lot of people. Building a startup is hard. It takes a lot of people to support you in the journey. It takes a lot of grit. It takes a lot of determination and grand vision. And so you just have to enjoy it. Don't try and get to a stage where you want to just sell it. Get it to a stage where you enjoy it every day, where you're like, you know what? I could do this for the next 10 years. That's when you've won.
Thank you so much, Seba, for that. And I agree with you, right? It's something that I personally am practicing on trusting my gut and my intuition more. You know, still be open to feedback, right? But at the end of the day, it's my own journey, as you mentioned, right? And I think that's a great advice for all of us to keep in mind, right, as we go through the world of startups or business in general, even life, right? Awesome, Sal. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I really look forward to having you on more episodes so we can dive deeper into other topics around startups and happiness and personal development. But for now, thank you so much for your time. It's been awesome to have you on the show.
Absolutely. This has been my absolute pleasure. I really enjoyed learning from you. You know, I actually really enjoyed the thing that you shared in the previous podcast with Enrique, where you talked about how it's not about helping 50 or 100 people. It's about really helping deeply, maybe a smaller group. And we really believe that at Techstars too, about how it's all about quality before quantity. And so I really enjoyed that podcast of yours with him.
Thank you so much, Seba. And I always tell people, you know, do things that don't scale until it doesn't work, right? Because that's the key, right? Like, for example, right, onboarding people when they join your membership or community, have one-on-one calls with them, right? Until it doesn't work anymore, because that's going the extra mile and creates that intimacy. But anyways, I could go on and on about this, but thanks for sharing that. I appreciate you. Thank you so much again. And we'll definitely do more episodes and dive deeper into startups.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Alan. All right, I want to stop recording.
I'm so glad you asked. Cesar, I have the best job in the world. I get to learn from founders all day long, see cutting edge new technologies, and then I get to learn from the best investors from around the world that have done it before. And so, man, I wish you could join me anytime.
Awesome. That's perfect.